brought to you by bedroombattlefield.com. This is the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. So, welcome to the podcast, Dave, a legend of the Question of the Month episodes. It's good to have you on live for a conversation.
Hi, Matthew. It's good to be here.
Yeah, so long-time listeners, if indeed we have any, will know your voice. You've sent in a good few voice clips documenting various things. You know, you've talked about...
I can't help myself.
Yeah, you've talked about... At least you weren't as bad as Jason on that last one. I think it was four or five times.
Like sometimes I have felt the urge to do just that and kind of go, oh, do you know, maybe I have another wee bit, do you know, maybe. But
yeah,
I try to keep a lid on it, like...
Well, he didn't.
Well, it sounds like he was passionate, you know. He had a soapbox and he was going to stand on it, I think, just right too.
Yeah, and with Ronnie Renton almost certainly being an avid listener, you never know what might come from that. So
you never know, to the benefit of us all.
So, there's a few wee things I want to kind of pick your brains on or just find out about, ask you a bit about, you know, what you're up to. But I guess, like, it'd be nice to get a wee bit of background. Like, what brought you to this hobby in the first place, whenever that might have been?
I mean, when I must have been, like, 10 or 11, probably about 11 years old, a wee fella I went to school with. He's obviously not a wee fella now, he'll be in his 40s. Alan Cooper, if you're listening, was round at his house, and he has an older brother who had the second edition 40k box set, and probably unbeknownst to him, his wee brother and his mate were rifling through it and, you know, knocking about with orcs and Gretchen and Space Marines and not having a clue what we were up to. So that was my sort of first indication that, you know, this was a thing. And then whenever started secondary school, there would have been like a war games club that I went along to, and lo and behold, that was the stuff that they were playing with. Some of the older lads were playing Blood Bowl mostly, which was a entirely sensible option when you've got like an hour after school. But we were determined to put like 2,000 points of second edition armies on the tables and play half of a first turn before it was time to go. So that was what we were doing. Just, you know, fill the tables with, in my case, it was like literally 40 Harlequins and nothing else. And, you know, games were garbage. It wasn't any sense of, you know, how the game was supposed to be played. And then Necromunda was released, and that was the end. Like, that was it. Didn't bother much with 40k after Necromunda, because it was perfect just for, you know, you've got 10 guys max, and you can knock out a quick game, you know, with a reasonably satisfying conclusion by the time it's, you know, time to pack up and go. So, got heavily into Necromunda. Third edition 40k came out, and I just wasn't interested. Didn't play 40k again until about fifth edition, when this would have been like after university, or sort of during university years, when a couple of mates sort of got back together to play some things. I had played a bit of, I think, fifth edition fantasy with Wood Elves back in the day as well. So we did a lot of fantasy. It would have been seventh edition by then. Fantasy Battle, and it was all Games Workshop, apart from a wee bit of Battletech back then too, and it wasn't really until kids came along, and my oldest wanted a miniature to represent Hedgy the Hedgehog, and I showed him like some hedgehogs from Burrows and Badgers I'd heard about, you know, listening to podcasts, and was like, oh, this sounds great, you know, like a wee hedgy miniature, like perfect for that. And he just was determined, no, Hedgy doesn't wear armor, he doesn't wear a coat, he doesn't wear any clothes, he's just a naked hedgehog with a sword. It's like, I'm not gonna find that anywhere. Nobody's like selling anthropomorphic hedgehogs with swords and basically just had to make it myself. So that was the beginning of a whole other thing. So that was really what's launched the hobby parenting vibe. More than anything else, just the requirement for hedgy representation on the tabletop.
There's a lot to pick up on there. Like going back firstly to Second Dead 40K, you mentioned Harlequin, so you were collecting Eldar then at that point, presumably.
Like, I had an Eldar Codex, which I sadly no longer have, and will rue the day that I ever lent it to somebody, because it was like one of the single greatest publications Games Workshop ever produced. And it was the Harlequins, like the wee section on it, that really grabbed me. I wasn't interested in like much else of like the whole Eldar second edition range is glorious, but it must have been something just about that wee enclave, that wee, you know, isolated Harlequin thing. That I just thought, oh, these guys are class. And I just was buying like blisters of Harlequins and painting them up, just with no regard for like army sort of color unity or just anything goes, just teaching myself to paint basically, and making a big mess of them. And then I did have a Space Wolves army at one point as well. But I don't think I ever really sort of had the same affinity for Space Wolves. I think it was just a thing that was happening at the time. I sort of reconditioned a lot of them into a 5th edition 40K Space Marine Force later on, and sold mostly the rest. And I managed to get some of my old Harlequins back, but not the really good ones. Like, I had that classic, you know, guy with the big hair, great Harlequin, pointy guy with the sword, I've never been able to find again. So
it's interesting you say about Space Wolves. Like, I'm guessing based on what you're saying that we're about the same age, and I get the impression that a lot of guys ended up with Space Wolves. And why I think it is, I don't know if you're the same, but there was a guy in White Dwarf, I want to say Kim Cyborg or something like that. I think he was pretty well known for this Space Wolves army. It was heavily converted, at least, you know, heavily converted at the time. You know, he'd scratched up a lot of tanks and stuff. And I just remember seeing that army, and I obviously had Space Marines from the second edition box set, and I ended up making them into Space Wolves and got a few tanks and a couple of metal models and that. So I don't remember
specifically Space Wolves from White Dwarf. I think it was just leafing through the codex in the shop. There's there would have been Games Workshop in Belfast, and that Space Wolves codex was a pretty nice book. There were some of the stories in it were outrageous as well. Like, Ragnar Blackmane like literally shoves a grenade down a Carnifex's throat at one point. And, you know, like, somersault backflips, you know, out of the way before it completely explodes from plasma igniting, you know. He single-handedly takes down a Carnifex with a grenade. And I think maybe reading that, I was like, yeah, I want that guy.
Yeah.
I had the Bjorn the Fell-Handed Dreadnought as well. Actually, I had all the... like the main characters, and converted Ulrich into Terminator armor, even though it wasn't an option in the army book.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly because I had a Space Wolf Terminator that I thought, this would be cool as a character. Don't know, but
so Necromunda, like you posted some quite cool stuff over the last wee while on the Discord. Like, you were keeping my newsletter and stuff. It seemed like you had a bunch of guys that got very into it and had quite a lot of fun. So you tell us a wee bit about that.
Yeah, that was the crack. That was like the greatest Necromunda campaign of all time. It was a bunch of lads, sort of, you know, late teens, early 20s, mostly, with a lot of time on our hands. And it was organized largely through email, of just I think there was maybe 10 of us, and I had it every round. You had, you know, two matchups that were like randomly drawn, and then one that you could choose yourself. So after your two matchups, you probably had like a grudge match that you wanted to put on someone, or you know, had like some guy that you needed to run a rescue mission for or something. So it was always those like player choice scenarios. It was literally like the player chooses the scenario and chooses who he's doing it to. You know, it wasn't a kind of, you know, you roll on the table and see what it is kind of thing. So it really gave the players that agency to just, you know, double cross each other and just be brutal. They were bringing in like other players and saying, yeah, I'm gonna like, you know, treat you as hired guns, and I'll, you know, take like three of your guys and give you 50 creds, you know, for you know, for the opportunity to, you know, have an extra bit of muscle against this character. So people were just, you know, showing up randomly and being like, oh yeah, I've, you know, I'm in on this match, didn't you know? And you would end up some proper grudge matches going on. It ended with a great big table. I think it was like a ping pong table, and we had, I think, three box sets of terrain, and like a Necron monolith in the middle. So the idea was that all this crazy stuff that had been happening was because the Necrons had appeared, and you know, you had like the four strongest gangs left at the end duking it out until it had like some predetermined, like in the fifth turn, you know, the Necrons are going to appear and they're all going to have to either work together, or you know, someone will sneakily just back off and let the opponents get wiped out by Necrons and then roll in and finish, you know, finish the job. Or you know, so it was a bit of a mad final. But
how did it pan out, can you remember?
My mate Matt, who wins literally every tournament that ever we did. We actually had a knife that was most likely illegal to buy or sell or do whatever with, was the trophy. And I would have got like a wee jeweler's plaque engraved for every tournament that we did. And I think Matt got his name on the, you know, the black knife trophy, I think like three or four times for, I think he won a Gorkamorka one, but there was a wee fella who just loved Gorkamorka so much. That we kind of like, so Matt's name was engraved on the actual thing, but then we scratched it out and wrote Craig over it because Craig was so much more into it than he was, and he just refused to be beaten, and we thought, yeah, that's well orky, so you know, we'll just give Craig the unofficial win on this one. But yeah,
were you running the wee newsletter at the time, or yes, was it a collaborative?
No, it was unfortunately all me, so I don't have anyone else to blame for the somewhat off color and maybe haven't aged well jokes therein. But
it was all encouraged in White Dwarf, wasn't it? Because I think Andy Chambers was running it, and Gav Thorpe took over.
100%. That sort of tongue in cheek, like, you know, vibe was very much coming from that the White Dwarf editorial style. Definitely,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you ever get a game in Ecnomunda nowadays?
I would do at the drop of a hat. It largely, my gaming depends on what the wee man's into. If he wants to sort of focus on his Tomb King's army or something, you know, if we're heading down to the library of a Saturday, it'll be like Tomb Kings versus, you know, goblins or dwarfs or something, because that's what he wants to play. And that's cool as long as he's enthusiastic about doing it. The more I try and put something on him, he's just not going to be interested anymore. So, you know, I kind of let him take the lead on that. We tried a bit of Blood Bowl last week. I don't know that he was super into it. So I don't think we're going to fully jump in there, but it was good to kind of just get a read on that before buying a box set and, you know, really investing that heavily in the game. So I had a crack at that, and it was fun and all, but by the end of the day, him and his mate were just talking about fitting up the mines for a dwarf goblin siege, so that's what we're going to be getting into. So it'll be more kind of 7th edition Warhammer in an odd environment. So I'm going to have to work out what we're going to do in terms of like made up siege rules and how that's going to fly. Be an interesting one, but we'll see, we'll see.
I'll ask you about that in a second. I was curious about, you know, did you go away from the hobby for a few years?
A wee bit. But I feel like it was always in the back of my mind. There was, you know, a few years here and there, but I don't think, you know, it wasn't like a massive gap of, you know, recalling the, you know, something you did 10 years ago and pulling things back out of the attic. Like I feel like my collections have always been, you know, fairly to the forefront of my mind, and, you know, would still have done a wee bit of painting here and there, and, you know, I feel like I haven't ever really taken a full break from it, if you know what I mean. So been different times as well. I've done other wee bits and pieces. I've got a big collection of like 1-300 scale World War II aircraft. That's just an entirely beside anything, you know, because I like them and wanted to paint up a bunch of tiny planes. So I really went in deep on that and was doing like you know, full little like historical reviews of different air forces and things, just for the crack, and played a few wee simple like Battle of Britain games, just to see what an air combat game was like to play. It's just been the kind of thing that I've been into.
So that these days, like, all the hobbying you do is pretty much revolving around like your son, I take it, and what he's getting up to.
Yeah, very much. I've managed to sneak in a game of Turnip 28 against one of the guys down in the library, and him and his mate they had the Minecarts and Mole Trolls board on the go. And actually, it would have been interesting just to see how they played it themselves. Do you know, without the, you know, the games master sort of calling the shots on it. Do you know, it'd be interesting to see just how the, you know, their wee like miniature native, you know, mindset puts a real set together, you know, just on the fly, the two of them.
So the name of the game is Minecarts and Mole Holes, is that right?
Mole Trolls.
Mole Trolls.
Yeah, so
not
you get holes. You get a mole. It's sort of like a were-mole, and you feed it magical emeralds, and it becomes more and more troll-like, to the point where you can bring it on a raid against some nasty bearded dwarves and use it to clobber their minecarts with. So you've got a mole troll, do you know? Minecarts and mole trolls.
Cryovolcano, a solo scenario that could be played with any sci-fi skirmish rule set and miniatures, is now available on the Bedroom Battlefields Patreon. It was originally published in Miniature Wargames magazine, and you'll now find everything you need to play it, along with a whole host of additional bonus content, over at patreon.com/bedroombattlefields. That's patreon.com/bedroombattlefields. And now, back to the show. And this is a game that you and your son developed, isn't it?
Yeah. He wanted. I think I got a wee plastic set of terrain that was I'll say like Cowboys and Lasers or something. And it was like a minecart and you know, some rubble and some. It was for doing like an underground Burrows and Badgers terrain setup. So I wanted to get some underground sort of miney stuff. And I think he saw that wee minecart and he was like, here, this would be cool to ride in, but it's too small. Wouldn't it be great to do like a game where you're riding around in minecarts and, you know, doing that underground with the train tracks? And, you know, it would be like fast and furious and crazy. So it was kind of, it's one of these suggestions that you kind of think, well, where do you start with that? Like, do you know where? How do you? Do you get like a Christmas train? Do you know those wee train sets you get in Christmas shops?
Yeah.
You know, and kind of cut it out so that's where you've got your train tracks from, and you know, you like make wee carts to have miniatures right in, because if you've got like a 2 millimeter, like a 20 mm base, you know, how many dwarfs can you fit in a minecart? And that's really what sets the size of your minecart. And you know, all these considerations sort of start flying around your brain going, well, what's that going to actually physically look like, and how am I going to translate that into a playable game? And I was actually listening to the episode that you ran with Rule of Carnage.
Oh yeah, hi Mike and Glenn.
Yeah, yeah, and a lot of their suggestions for, you know, when you're putting a game together, like what is the key, you know, ingredient that needs to be, you know, the real essence of this game that you can't lose. And for me, that has been like the speed of a runaway minecart, like has to be ever present. Otherwise, it's just, it just grinds to a halt. Everything, you know, the boys just jump out, they go mining, they go and attack goblins. It doesn't matter. Your minecart's just waiting there for you. So It just becomes a game, like a skirmish game, like everything else. So, you know, we made it part of the game that the minecart's going to go 10 inches down the track unless somebody's driving it, like holding the brake, and you have to roll 2d6 to, you know, apply the brakes. And that's, you know, how many inches you can slow the cart by. And, you know, that really kind of helps to, you know, to make it that much more frantic, that much more frenetic pace. And then you've got a kind of like a playing card system for what goblins are going to come at you. So we had it all set up that you draw like 6 cards, I think we said, per turn for what goblins appear or what bonuses appear. So if it's a red card, it's going to be like a resource node or a mining node, or if it's a like a red face card, it'll be an emerald. You know, the green emeralds are the real thing that the dwarves are after, because they're the magical gems that everybody wants. So if it's a black card, it'll be a goblin, or it'll be a like goblin archer or a goblin spearman, or if it's a face card, it'll be a mole like a mole rider or a mole troll. So this is kind of the generating enemies to throw at you, and the longer you dilly dally around going down your mine track, the more goblins are going to be surrounding you, and you'll not get anywhere. So that was kind of the two elements against each other. But then you start throwing other people in, and then somebody's like, oh, can I be the goblins? So you go, all right, so now we've got, you know, we need to make like stats for playable goblin characters and have somebody in a goblin minecart. And, you know, then we had ideas for what do you do with these resources that you gather, and what do you spend the money on? And, you know, now we need cart upgrades, and, you know, before you know it, you've got carts with hummingbird wings and like ejector seats and reinforced rams and boarding planks and hunter seeker missiles and just whatever. So yeah, I've ended up with a whole rule book just by having to develop the, you know, the notions that, you know, that come, you know, one after another.
Mm-hmm. You just getting to play it quite a lot then, I take it.
Yeah, we have done. We've had it on the go. Played it a couple of times, like 3 or 4 times at home, and probably as many times down to the library as well, with a couple of other players. It's a dead versatile game for just, you know, somebody happens to be hanging around and you're like, oh, do you want to jump in? And you just, you know, give them a minecart and throw some spare dwarves in them, and, you know, that's their cart, you know, and they pick a track and they rattle down their track and you rattle down your track, and the goblins are where they are and the resources appear where they appear, and the thing kind of plays itself, you know, in terms of scenarios. So it's pretty fun. It's a bit tricky to keep it fair maybe for everybody. you know, because sometimes you're just on the fly going, ah, 4+, you know, whatever. But then if you've got like an external player coming in, you know, that expects a bit more of a, not rigorous system, but, you know, a bit more of, you know, something a bit more worked out, you kind of realize how much that genuinely you are fudging it a wee bit for the kids to enjoy. So you kind of, you're trying to work that balance. So.
And it sounds like your son's keen to kind of do something with it as well. Like if he maybe could in future.
He's thinking, you know, that he wants to market and sell this. And I'm thinking, like, production wise, you know, how would you even do that? Because what I've got fits, you know, it's the board splits into 4 blocks that you can stack in the boot of your car. You know, there's no way that's fitting in a, you know, standard game box. I immediately go to, could you play at 10mm scale? Could you do it with MDF, you know, or cardstock slotted terrain? Like, you know, I'm trying to work out in my head the actual physical production of this thing. Don't know. Honestly, I haven't figured that one out yet, but he's keen to you know, to try and develop this and make it a thing. So you never know.
You mentioned the library a few times. Like, that's the wee club you've got, isn't it?
Yeah. We seen a poster up down at the library, Warhammer Club, naturally we were like, oh, that's for us, that'll do. Went down and found a bunch of really great guys, mostly 40k players who are playing umpteenth edition 40k and enjoying themselves and having a great time. Playing some Legions Imperialis as well, and a bit of Blood Bowl as well. We've been showing up with the Goblin Green bases playing Warhammer Fantasy, and being the old Hammer rank and flank representatives, which is keeping a bit of variety about the place. And it's been great, just you know, being part of a the group's growing a lot every week, and they're starting to get into a bit of kill team as well, which wouldn't be a bad option, if I say so, with no funds with which to support a kill team habit, but that could become a thing. So, yeah, that's been fun.
And were you literally, you were mentioning the rank and flank, like, you got a game of like 5th edition or that on the go, or...?
It's been 7th edition with 6th edition army books.
Right.
So I've more goblins than I can shake a stick at, more wood elves than I can shake a tree man at, and now I have plenty of skeletons for a Tomb King's army, which is pretty much complete if still half unpainted. And now that the minecarts and moltrolls has been getting on the go, we're most of the way into a playable dwarf force as well. I think we managed 1,200-ish points of dwarfs. So Noah's mate wants to put a dwarf army together, so he's got the land of the 6th edition army book at the minute, and has got himself some miners, and that's very much where they're at the minute. He's doing the dwarf end of things. Son's doing the Tomb Kings end of things. So we had a wee Tomb Kings versus Dwarfs battle, about 1,200 points, and that was a resounding Tomb Kings victory. Possibly, I don't know. I think there was a bit of bad luck on both sides, but I think the Tomb Kings got the best of it in the end. But it was quite a one-sided victory, so I'm not sure. I just don't have my head around how dwarves operate yet, but I understand they're actually not the easiest army to field in fantasy, so it's maybe not just me. I hope it's not anyway.
How often are you playing? Are you going down weekly or what?
It's every other week.
Right.
I think we'll be missing it the next time it's on, because there's end of year exams on. So I think it'll be probably another month before we're down. But we can usually squeeze a wee game in at home every now and then too. So
yeah,
you know, that's always an option. We've put together another funny wee game called Dead Simple, which it's essentially two necromancers going at it, using whatever bones happen to be lying around to fight their battles for them. So it's kind of like Skelly Jeff versus Rattlecast, and you have a few gravestones on the board, and you can raise the dead and have this guy do your dirty work, but then the other guy can also roll off to steal your command off him and turn him against you, and you kind of have the trade off of, if you're going to fight this guy, are you going to destroy him, or are you going to turn him against the other guy? So there's kind of a bit of a resource management thing going on, but it's very much a one page as simple as could possibly be rule set, which we had a wee go at, and we thought was a bit of fun.
Cool.
So yeah.
So just get a few more games out, kind of see how it pans out.
Yeah, it's kind of it needs a bit more play testing before throwing it out to the general public, I think. But it's an interesting idea anyway, to kind of have that you can raise the rabble, or you can have them destroy each other, and then just have the wizards fight each other directly. But it seems to be, I think the main issue with it at the minute is, if you figure out that you can just ignore the skeletons and go directly for the guy, who's wasting all his resources trying to raise skeletons, and then you just hammer him and say, yeah, it turns out you don't need to bother with any of these guys. It kind of just blows the whole game up. So
yeah,
need to work that out somehow.
Yeah, there's always wee kinks like that, isn't there?
Yeah. What about yourself? You've got
Oh yeah, I've got the sci-fi and the fantasy ones. So I've got Blaster Station.
Blaster Station. I was hoping to get a rattle at that sometime, but haven't managed to talk anyone into it yet. But have you had much testing on that?
So I've not played it for a while. I did play it quite a lot months ago. So I was pretty happy with where it was at, and then I did the fantasy alternative, which I managed to play with Callum not that long ago. So I'm really happy with that now, actually. I pitched it to Miniature War Games magazine, rather than just doing a drive-through RPG or that. I thought it's pretty cool to get it in the magazine. So
yeah.
Pitched the rules to John, the editor there, and he seems keen. So I need to write that up. I don't know, time frames and stuff. I don't know when that, certainly this year, but probably later in the summer should be in the magazine.
And this is primarily the fantasy one?
Yeah, the fantasy one, yeah.
And what's the sort of storyline, set up there? What's the idea behind it?
So both games involve you playing on a square area, or a rectangular area would work, but it's only the fact that I've got a 4x4 mat. That's why I base all my games
that sort
on
of quartered,
zones.
Yeah.
Ah, exactly. It's quartered, like you've got zone or sector A, B, C, or D. So you enter on the corner of zone A, and you exit off the corner of zone D. So you're going diagonally straight across the table. And there's a lot of NPCs between you and the exit point. And then, I've added the usual things like treasure markers. And then it was just about coming up with decent ways to make the NPCs challenging.
Have you tried
the fact that you can't just trick them?
Have you tried playing it with your daughter?
No, I don't think she's quite there yet, but I'd
be surprised, you know.
The way she's going, it won't be long.
Yeah, yeah. It's whenever you kind of you throw this together and you're like, all right, here's how this is going to work, and then your child picks up this one thing and just goes, yeah, but, you know, obviously it's like this, right? And you're looking at it going, of course, it should have been all along. They just see right through, your best laid plans to, you know, the heart of the thing in a way that maybe, you know, you're kind of, you know, jaded 20 years of wargaming is just, you know, getting in the way.
Our question of the month for May 2025 is quite simply, what are your favourite games? The rule sets you'll always find yourself coming back to again and again. Maybe you have one miniatures game to rule them all and you only ever play that. Or perhaps you have a stable of games that cover each genre, from naval and space warfare to dungeon bashing to 6mm sci-fi and beyond. Tell us about the games you love by going to bedroombattlefields.com/voicemail and I need them in by Friday the 30th of May. That's bedroombattlefields.com/voicemail and now back to the show. I mean, I think it was Ben on the Blood Bowl episode I was talking about this, but my daughter's got right into polyhedral dice because I've got this wee dice tower and we kind of just play with it in the mornings. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she's starting to know, like, this is a D20, this is a D12, this is a D4. She's got a memory like an elephant because I'd said about the D4, I was just kind of making a joke. I was like, you wouldn't want to stand on one of these. And she says, why? And I said, oh, it'd be really sore. So like every time she's getting a D4, and remember, don't stand on these. I'm not going to, but...
And don't put one in your back pocket if you find it in the video.
I know. that must have been sore.
That was just a... Oh, yeah. That's where I put that thing.
The things are lethal. Like, what were the weapons that they used to use? You know, they throw them down on the ground.
Caltrops, are they?
Yeah, aye.
Yeah,
they're pretty much them. So
I'm sure LARPers have that all figured out. Do you know?
Yeah.
Caltrop attack. It's just a handful of D4s. Just, you know, you don't necessarily need to know what you've rolled.
Yeah.
You just wait for the screams of your vanquished enemies.
I'll certainly leave a few around the house in a kind of Macaulay Culkin style way at Christmas time.
Yes,
a couple
exactly.
of bungling burglars.
That's it. Home security.
One thing I wanted to ask you about was sculpting. So
sure.
You kind of touched on this earlier, like making your hedgehog. So how did that kind of pan out?
I've always had a lot of, green stuff and tools and things lying around just for, we repair things and, you would like do a wee press mold copy of a bit or whatever, but I had never made a miniature from scratch. And it was the wee man kind of saying, you know, quite emphatically that because his teddy of a little hedgehog, you know, is what it is. Like, that's what it had to look like, just that guy with a sword. So I was looking at a lot of things that Mike Lovejoy posted whenever he was sculpting for Burrows and Badgers, and he would have put up kind of like a step-by-step, you know, here's how I sculpted this badger. And it was, you know, sort of following that process, going, all right, you've kind of got a wire frame and then you bulk that out with, he says, Milliput. Some people use tinfoil, or originally I was using like PVA glue and tissue paper. So I grabbed a paper clip and just twisted it into a little stick man shape, and actually I got my son to draw a picture of Hedgie. It was like, right, well, what pose is the miniature going to be in? So he just drew like a sweet potato man with his sword sticking out and a wee arm kind of back. And he was actually like, you know, he would stand in the pose and pretend he was like striking with a sword and, you know, think about his own position. And then he drew this picture of Hedgie, like, you know, striking with a sword. So that was, you know, that was the guide. And I made him a little paperclip stick man in that shape and put some PVA glue and tissue paper around it to bulk it out a wee bit, and then started layering on the green stuff, and it came out really well. I was like, oh yeah, do you know, I can do this. That's, you know, that's class. I was putting like bristles from a brush in on the back of them for hedgehog spikes, and that was really the beginning of that. And you know, we went on to just totally fill out the universe. We would write stories of Hedgie and his friends. Do you know, it's very much like bedtime story time. Do you know, let's think about such and such a character. And I would just ask him, like, pretend you're that character, and I'll just ask you questions. Like, what's your favorite breakfast? What's, you know, what things really annoy you? What, you know, and he would just pretend he's the character and, you know, go through answering these questions that would really just like fill out the character, fill out their vibe, fill out, you know, the kind of backstory of them. And that really fueled the stories, which just fueled the games. And, you know, you would like, oh, we really need, you know, Armor Dog. We really need his doggy henchmen. And, you know, now we've got a full block of 20 doggy henchmen, complete with a variety of weapons. And some of them have, you know, placards and party snacks and, you know, stuff that's directly from the stories that we were writing of. The doggy henchmen are kind of a long-suffering proletariat who don't appreciate their capitalist overlord using their labor for his nefarious ends. So they had a protest and demanded the rights to party. So we have the party pups, and we have some more combative pups. So there's a wide variety of dog breeds in all shapes and sizes represented now.
What age is your son now?
He's 13 now. Younger son is 11. So they both have very different tastes in games and, you know, what they're into. My younger son would be more likely to get excited about a bell curve of the probabilities of 2d6 versus a d12, for instance.
Yeah.
You know, he's very much puzzle solving and not that interested in combative games. But, you know, would still jump in and, you know, play a wee game with us if we said to him, like, what do you want to play? You know, what kind of environment we're going to play it in, what kind of miniatures we're going to need. You know, you'll be up and down in the roof space rummaging through all sorts of stuff, because the ideas will start flying at you. You know, you're going to need a boat, you're going to need you know, spaceships, you're going to need some kind of aliens and a treasure island. You know, the Playmobil toys, you know, start getting thrown out on the table, and, you know, everything's just you know, tossed in before you know it. You know, the game's happening, and you let them be the games master and they'll play all night. You know, the minute I turn around and say, oh, you know what would be class, you know, let's have space marines, and, you know, they'll just switch right off. They'll just be like, nah, that's not what's happening. Just,
you've jumped a shark.
Yeah, that's it. So yeah, like, very much I find when gaming with the kids, you just have to let them call the shots a bit. You know, in terms of what's available to them, I really try and not be precious about, you know, that classic second edition impossible to replace probably 40 quid's worth of miniature. You know, if they're like, what we really need is that gene stealer magus guy, you kind of reluctantly produce him from the box, but if he's not there to be played with, then, you know, what's he there for? You know,
yeah.
At the end of the day, like, you know, they're not going to love these miniatures if they don't have the same enjoyment of playing with them as I do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if I want to hang on to them, if I want to, you know, essentially pass on a collection or whatever, you know, it's going to be the difference between them going to somebody that actually wants to enjoy them, or they'll just be hefted in a skip at the end of the day. So,
yeah, that's you know? A good point.
So there's been, you know, dragons and pieces. There's been, you know, things broken that need repaired. And I've got all the tools and all the stuff to do it. So what the heck?
Everything's fixable. And especially paint, you know, a wee bit of paint gets chipped. It's 100%. Not the end of the world.
Yeah, 100%. I would much rather chip the paint than have these precious things that my kids feel like I care more about than I, you know, care about playing with them, do you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like somebody, you know, granny's fine china in a cabinet. Like, it's just there.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, you're just like, oh, that stupid china. Like, all she ever went on about was, you know, you just think, you know, if every time you come round to granny's and she was like, let's get the best china out, we'll have a wee cup of tea, do you know, you would prize granny's china, like,
yeah, appreciate
the precious
it more
memory.
If you had a scone on it.
Do you know, wouldn't you? That's the key to it, isn't it? Like, definitely, you want them to feel like they own the miniatures as much as you do. I feel like at the end of the day,
yeah, and that they are miniatures; they're not decorations or ornaments.
That's it. And yeah, I mean, there's ones that are more useful than others. You know, like there's wee fiddly plastic skeletons that'll break in the blink of an eye. Sometimes you kind of just think, oh, we'll not use them because, you know, guaranteed I'm just going to be, you know, trying to fix this thing for the umpteenth time. But, you know, you try as much as you can to, you know, represent what they want to see on the board. You know, it's the spectacle of it as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you wanna see the thing, like, especially like we objective markers. I have a whole like big tub of just bizarre things that at one point I felt the need to, you know, oh, we're gonna need some blueprints. You know, I'm gonna have to make a little base with a table on it and some paper blueprints, or you know, like a suitcase or a laptop or a, you know, magic sword and a stone, or, you know, I think having that physical thing to, you know, to show a child, to say like, you know, this is what you've discovered in this room, or, you know, this is the thing, this is the objective marker that your warband are trying to reach, you know, for them to physically be able to hold it when they get it, you know, to remind themselves later on the game that, oh yeah, I've got this shield, you know, I'm going to use the shield, or I've got this, you know, thing that somebody's carrying that's going to need to be passed on, you know. I think that really helps too.
Mm-hmm. Are you got any painting done this week at all yet?
I have been painting Gaslands obstacles. This would be because Dan Adam, the yesterday's man of podcasting, as he once hilariously called him. I'm gonna remember that, because Ding and Dan in the podcast, like, that's just a bedroom battlefield tradition now. His monthly painting challenge, the topic this month has been Gaslands. So I am, having recently painted 4 cars for Gaslands, thought, I'm going to need to have some obstacles for game 2. So I'm making a wreck, and I've collected about 40 spools from doggy poo bags, generally plastic spools, and they're all racked up like, you know, like an industrial pallet of tubes.
Right.
And some fridge bits that look like concrete dragon's teeth. So yeah, that's taken part in that and just putting those together. I've yet to play Gaslands, but it's one of these games that I just think, I know that you know, once we get that on the go, it's going to be fun. And I'm kind of just putting that together so that it's like preloaded and ready to go when the opportunity arises. So
yeah,
that's cool. That's been the plan for that. And again, like, you know, if I was to say, oh, let's play some Gaslands, you know, I think, you know, the guys would be like, all right, cool, whatever, we'll have a go at that. So sometimes it goes both ways. Sometimes I can, you know, make a wee suggestion and they'll go for it. But whether they sort of latch on to it and go, oh yeah, let's play loads of Gaslands, you know, it's very much up to them. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good place to be, so having a club, you know, even if the games that are being played aren't necessarily what you'd get into yourself, it's still the opportunity to be around folk. And
yeah,
and it sounds like you are still, you know, getting to sometimes tempt people over into the yeah, more independent side.
That's it. Like, yeah, I've, you know, just talking to one of the guys and he mentioned Turnip 28, and it was one of these things that I'd, you know, seen about and kind of thought, oh, you know, that looks cool, but realistically, like, am I ever going to play Turnip 28? And just hearing somebody, you know, across the table mention it, you know, it was just locked in my brain of like, yeah, I'm going to do this. I gotta, you know, just for me, just for a, you know, a wee, like, you know, project all, you know, because I want to. And yeah, we knocked out a wee game of that, and it wasn't the greatest game, largely by dint of the two of us never having played it before. And you know, it was maybe a bit of a suboptimal you know, gaming experience, but you know, certainly not that I wouldn't ever go back, you know, or try it again. You know, the other thing is, like, you meet some of these guys and they're talking about like playing 40K at like a highly competitive tournament level, you know, and that's like, that's not anything I've ever been interested in taking on, but you just realize there's a real broad, you know, depth of experience and, you know, just the gamers around you, you know, coming at it from, oh, this is the first game of 40K I've ever played, but I really like these Necrons and thought they were really cool, and, you know, this guy showed me how to use them, and that's class. And, you know, the guy showing you how to use them is a guy who's recently placed, you know, third in a local highly competitive tournament, who could completely table you in every single game, but is, you know, happy to just show someone the ropes. And, you know, it's cool. It's, you know, it's a great wee community.
I mean, that is a great way to learn, like, you know, playing. So if they're a nice person, which it sounds like you're fortunate enough to be around, you know, somebody who knows a game inside out is a brilliant way to learn it, like playing it with them. Mm-hmm. Certainly, that is, I think, how I would really absorb a rule set is by doing it. Like, I do find it takes me a wee while to read a rule book and for it really to start, you know, to make sense. And I do have to just get out and play like a couple of solo turns or whatever I'm doing, just to, I don't know, that's kind of how it starts to sink in for me. It takes a wee while for me. I think
I'd be the same. You know, it's you can read a rule book till you're blue in the face, but until it's really on the tabletop and you're seeing how the thing works, and, you know, it's the experience of going through it that, you know, that kind of makes it sink in a wee bit. You actually remember the things that you're reading. So yeah, I've, you know, kind of glossed through the Gaslands book, but wouldn't say in any way that it's in my head until I actually, you know, put some things on the table and really try and do it. And then I fully expect it'll just, you know, suddenly click and I'll be like, oh, it's so obvious, of course, do you know? But and as well, like, I don't think the lads have half a clue about Warhammer Fantasy, you know, rules, how things operate. You know, I'm just going, all right, you know, that's you're shooting here with a rock lobber, you've got to guess the range, and you know, now you've got to like roll your scatter dice, and, you know, they just go, oh, guess the range, I think it's like 40 inches, and lo and behold, he's actually insanely good at placing that range. But You know, you roll a scatter dice, he rolls a scatter dice, you know, place this template, he grabs the template, sticks it on, you know, like he's learning how a Screaming Skull catapult works just by, you know, doing it five times in a game, you know, whether he's going to remember that next time, you know, or, you know, it'll all come back to him when he looks up the rule book in 20 years, you know, who knows, but that's the best way to learn anything, isn't it?
Well, it's been a great wee chat, Dave. I really appreciate you coming on. Just as we sort of approach the end of our time, is there anywhere you want to send the listener, a website or a resource or, you know, anything like that?
I don't have any, you know, sort of website type stuff. You might find me on the Daka Daka forums, where I have lurked for a good number of years. But like by and large, I've just transplanted myself wholesale to the Bedroom Battlefields Discord. So get on there, and you'll see what I'm up to.
Things that we've covered in this episode, folks could go and check out, like your kind of Burrows and Badgers tribute miniatures and your Necromunda stuff and a lot more. Picture that you're sitting on a D4 in the car.
Sure. That's it. Like if anyone happens to mention anything that I've previously done, I'll, you know, pretty much throw it up there instantaneously. Like, you know, the sea duck was mentioned in the IPs, and lo and behold, a sea duck appeared. So that, you know, that's how I operate. that was just for a spoof. I did a wee World War II, you know, historical flying boats and seaplanes, and just threw the sea duck in there like it was a real historical World War II thing. So
Tailspin Warband.
That was it. Yeah, just. chucked it in there along with a PBY Catalina and all.
Cool. Well, we'll get it wrapped up there, Dave, but I'm sure you will be on the podcast again very soon, because you're pretty good with the old question of the month. So
keep up the good work. I have one chambered as we speak, so
good.
I'll be finally crafting that for next month.
Yeah, I was just trying to think what I'd asked. It's favourite games, isn't it?
It's favourite games. So
I've got a few good, what I think are good ones lined up for the next few months. So
excellent.
I'm enjoying doing those, and it was great to come back for holiday. And I was like, there is an episode made for me. Like, I don't need to really do anything.
It's great. I think like the community loves it. Like. People really get a lot out of those. It's definitely one of the best things that you're putting out there, just in terms of community engagement. Everybody getting a wee spot to give you some feedback. So they're cool. We're loving them.
I like to think that Ronnie called an emergency marketing meeting at Mantic, and they played it on like a loudspeaker.
Yes, so. Yes. We can only hope.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what Mantic do next, and whether it's been inspired by that episode and anyone's suggestion.
That's it. And whether you get a wee kickback in the post for that.
Yeah. Who knows? Who knows? Thanks very much for listening to this episode of the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. If you enjoy the show, then please do share it with someone else you think might enjoy it too. And be sure to check out our Discord community of like-minded hobbyists, which you could find at bedroombattlefields.com/Discord. It'd be great to see you in there.